I get this question sometimes. Under what circumstances does the safety of my children trump the parenting plan? Or no, it motivates me to intentionally be in contempt of the court order.
Yes.
Right.
Rick, what is he going to say about her? Or what is his attorney going to say about her?
Yep. Regardless of your good intentions and your excellent motivations, and actually whether it's even true or not, his halfway decent attorney is going to spin it to alienating behavior in order for dad to win and you to lose.
Yes. So we hear this term a lot, protective alienation, meaning I am going to keep my kids from the other parent because I feel like I must protect them.
Right.
And most attorneys will tell you that's a bad strategy.
Yes.
Hey, this is Diane Dirks.
And I'm Rick Voiles.
We've been working with co-parents in conflict for more than two decades. We've taught classes, written books, counseled parents, empathized and agonized a few times to help people make sense of their complicated families.
We were talking one day and it occurred to us that helping the most difficult cases comes down to one simple concept. Is one parent willing to let go of the tug-of-war rope, or is it worth it to hold on and fight?
So we invite you to take this journey with us each episode as we tackle the questions, should you hold on or let it go?
Welcome to Co-Parent Dilemmas, where we give you practical solutions to those impossible co-parents. Good morning, Diane.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. I'm enjoying the warmer weather. I like it.
Yeah, me too. It's been very nice here, although pollen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything's green. Yep.
And green and yellow. Yeah, so I'm not enjoying that. But, you know, still, I like the blue skies and the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a dilemma, Rick.
Is it a co-parent dilemma?
No.
Oh.
It's a roofing dilemma.
Some of the worst kind.
You already know this, but Rick and I have been avoiding recording for a couple of weeks now because we've had a roof issue. And they can't seem to get it remedied because every time they think they fix it, it pours down rain and it leaks once again in my kitchen.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm only telling our listeners this because we decided we're going to record today, come hell or high water. And there's a little bit of pounding in the background. So Rick is usually very good at taking out unwanted noises, but these may be too difficult to take out. So I just wanted our listeners to know if you hear a pound, knock, whatever in the background, it's because we couldn't put off recording any longer.
Right. I liked your, we're having a roofing issue with rain and water and you did hell or high water.
Right. Well, right now we're in hell.
Right.
Because there are industrial fans and a giant dehumidifier in my kitchen. And all weekend we're walking around these, you know, we're supposed to keep them on all day, but we haven't because they're so loud. We can't even talk to each other.
It's wow.
Just trying to dry everything out so they can fix the roof. So then the restoration people can come in. And by the way, this happened because we got a new roof, not because we
had
a leak.
That is weird.
We just decided our roof is 20 years old. We need a new roof. Guy came in, said, oh, yeah, you guys definitely need a new roof. And then they took the old roof off and put the new roof on, and it began to leak.
They did
not
something.
Just leak. I had like a flood in my kitchen.
They did something. So, they weren't, so, yep.
Well, they missed something.
Yes.
They're being very good about saying we will make it right at all costs, but I want reimbursed for my inconvenience.
Oh, right. Yes.
And I don't think it works that way. So today we're going to answer an email from Kimberly, and it sounds like Kimberly used to live in Georgia, and then she left to go back to Texas where she's from, but her co-parents stayed in Georgia where his family is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so her big question is, I think my kids are in a toxic environment when I send them to dads. So I'm wondering, should I keep letting them go there?
Right.
Which something tells me Kimberly already knows the answer to this, but she's needing some validation.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and read her email and then we'll discuss.
All right.
That I met my ex-husband while serving in the military. It was a toxic marriage. I finally left him, but I was close to his family as I had moved to Georgia to make our marriage work. My ex-husband was ready to move on, but needed me away from his family, so he told me to move back to Texas. His new wife is jealous of our kids and forbids him to communicate with me, even if it's about our children. 2 summers ago, he was arrested for domestic violence while my kids were visiting. They were fighting about our children. Last year, I refused to let the children go due to their toxic behavior. He's now back with the wife. I do not feel it's a good environment for my children. I asked if the children could stay with his parents while there, but he refuses. I don't know what to do. Should I let them go? My oldest 2 are 13 and 16, and they refuse to stay with him. The young ones are 6 and 8. Let me add that he occasionally will communicate with them, but he's pretty absent. So I do want them to spend time with their dad.
Yeah.
Again, it sounds like she's now in Texas. He's in Georgia. It sounds like they come to Georgia for the summers because she talked about 2 summers ago, him being arrested. Sounds like she's getting ready to decide whether to send them again this summer. Now, we don't know what happened last summer. So apparently things were okay last summer. So I'm not real clear on what has happened between 2 summers ago and now, other than maybe last summer he wasn't with the wife. And
right.
Now he's gotten back with the wife.
Right. They were
now
separated.
She's like, uh-oh, we're going to have a repeat of the thing that happened before. Couple things up front. Just because someone was arrested for domestic violence doesn't mean they were charged and convicted.
Right.
So I want to put that out there because lots of people get arrested for domestic violence because of what the police officer learns at the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly that arrest is to separate the two.
Yes.
To provide safety. And then there's always a hearing, usually within a week to 10 days, for the judge to hear what's happening and determine whether or not there ought to be a restraining order or whether someone should be, you know, convicted or sentenced for their domestic violence, that kind of thing. So I just want to throw that out there that just because there's an arrest doesn't mean he is an abuser. Although she did say it was toxic in her own marriage with him.
Right.
Obviously his new marriage has some level of toxicity because there was an incident 2 summers ago. But now again, I don't know what's happened in the 2 years other than that he's now back with the wife and she's nervous again. And I would say rightfully so. Would you say, Rick?
Yes. Well, yeah, given the history, I would lean to the suspicion right away, too. Yeah.
And toxic can mean a lot of things as well. What do you think toxic means, Rick?
An environment that's not healthy. Usually we think of toxic chemicals, right? And if you expose to those, that toxicity for too long, it's going to damage you seriously and maybe in a permanent way.
Yeah. So there can be a toxic incident, which is one thing, but then there can be a toxic pattern, which is quite another. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and there are, I do believe, some people that are just toxic people.
Yeah.
I've met people in my life where I avoid them. These can be family members, these uh-huh. can be neighbors, these can be yes. coworkers.
It could be your whole family.
Well, if your whole family is toxic, maybe you're the problem. But you know the kind of person I'm talking about, where
yes,
you just avoid because everything that's going to come out of their mouth is either going to be, you know, some sort of anger or bitterness or something that gets heaped upon you.
Yeah.
Just because you happen to be there listening, or some toxic people that you have to be in relationship with, maybe a parent or a sibling or something like a coworker, they twist things to blame you. You know, we use that term narcissism, but there's a lot of toxic people out there that don't really fall under the label of narcissism. They're just high conflict, toxic people.
Right.
So I don't know where this guy falls into that mix, but she remembers her toxic marriage. And now she's getting reports of his new toxic marriage.
Yeah.
So remember we talked about probabilities versus possibilities in a previous episode?
Uh-huh.
It's, in her mind, not just possible that it's a toxic environment, but it's probable.
Right. And not a one incident toxic.
Yeah. So I'm going to give her that Kimberly, you're probably right. It's probably not the best environment for your children. But I also want to harken back to what we've talked about before with regard to good enough parenting.
Mm-hmm.
That when you call in the authorities, and here in Georgia, it's the Department of Family and Children's Services, also known as DFACS. When you call in DFACS, they're not going to have time, number one, to read your 10-page history of what has happened with this man. They're going to walk in, interview parents, interview children, and make a fairly quick determination on whether or not the children are in immediate danger. And if they're not, they're going to say, see you later, because I have to go talk to the kids who are in immediate danger.
Yes.
I know that's not what a lot of people in her situation want to hear, because she's asking, should I let them go? You only have the power to let them if you have complete sole custody of these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, dad would have to only have some visitation rights, and you have complete and total power and control over all the decision-making around the children, which is rare.
Right.
But something tells me she doesn't, because they go to his house for summers and maybe even other holidays in between, which typically when there's that much time allotted, they will award at least joint legal custody.
Yes.
Which in most states means we get to make decisions for our kids in some way, shape, or form as joint parents. So if that's the case, Kimberly, and I'm going to ask you to refer to your parenting plan. If he has this time in the summer, you don't have an option. Yes, you must let them go. I'd rather say you must follow the parenting plan. And I know that's hard to hear, because you're thinking, it's my job to protect my kids and keep them safe.
Right.
This would be true if you were sending them to grandma's, sending them to a neighbor, sending them to your best friend's house, sending them to a camp, and you thought something wasn't right there. You would have every right in the world to say, not sending you.
Yes.
But this is the one exception, because you're sending them to a parent who has the same rights as you do, that the court believes that parent will also protect the child's safety.
You're right.
It's his job as well as yours to protect the child's safety. Now, whether he is or not is something that would be have to be investigated.
And then determined by a court.
And not investigated by you.
Right, right.
So it's sticky, and it's hard, and it's emotional, and it's frustrating. And
scary.
All of that. It's scary. Yeah.
So
but there's a lot not said in this email.
Right.
Too,
yeah.
That we can only deduce from the email what is going on. But that is my overarching response. So let's now get into possibilities. You know what the probabilities are. Let's get into what the possibilities
are. Let me, because I get this question sometimes. Under what circumstances does the safety of my children trump the parenting plan? Or no, it motivates me to intentionally be in contempt of the court order.
Yes. So let's talk about that. And this subject came up in our last Hump Day support group. And I think it's worthy to talk about because one of the questions that was asked of me is, why are there groups out there that say parental alienation does not exist? And then on the other continuum, you know, parental alienation completely and unequivocally exists if these two or three things are happening. And my position on that is anybody who takes an absolute stance on this is wrong because it depends.
Right.
And my answer to that was parental alienation absolutely happens in the worst kind of ways you can imagine. And then parental alienation absolutely does not happen in the worst ways that you can imagine for different reasons and different families. So my concern for Kimberly, and let's play this out, she says, you know what? I have experience in my marriage with him being abusive. He was actually arrested 2 years ago for the abuse. I thought that that was over because she moved out, but now she's back. Mm-hmm. Now I have every reason to believe that he's going to be abusing her in front of the kids. And I know in Georgia and some states, maybe the same, witnessing domestic violence can be considered a form of child abuse, again, depending on the intensity of that. So I feel like I should just keep them home and tell them, no, till you get rid of that wife, I'm not sending the kids there.
Right.
Rick, what is he going to say about her, or what is his attorney going to say about her?
Yep. Regardless of your good intentions and your excellent motivations, and actually whether it's even true or not, his halfway decent attorney is going to spin it to alienating behavior in order for dad to win and you to lose.
Yes. So we hear this term a lot, protective alienation, meaning I am going to keep my kids from the other parent because I feel like I must protect them.
Right.
And most attorneys will tell you that's a bad strategy.
Yes.
Because it's not up to you to protect their safety with the other parent. And right. That is so hard to hear.
Yes. Yes.
It's the only entities that can protect the kid's safety from the other parent is the court or, you know, the authorities in charge of child protection. And so it really puts you in a dilemma, a real scary dilemma. Thinking, I want to protect my kids, but if I do, I'm going to be called a parental alienator. And so that's how this fight gets started. There are a lot of parents who rightfully say she's or he's alienating me because they won't let the kids come. They're refusing for me to have my court-ordered custody. And on the other hand, there are parents who make stuff up.
Yes.
In order to alienate.
Yes.
I don't know, Kimberly. Maybe she's making this all up so that she doesn't have to send her kids because she just doesn't like him and the new wife. Mm-hmm. So how do we determine whether or not Kimberly is involved in protective alienation or pathological alienation?
Right.
You and I don't know. Mm-mm. We're getting a paragraph from someone. Mm-hmm. So that's why guardians ad litem get appointed. That's why custody evaluators get appointed. And you and I have talked ad nauseum about those roles. And even then, it's difficult.
Yes.
They don't always see things the way they truly are. Right?
Or they're incompetent.
Right. Yeah. So it's just, I don't like this topic because there's not a good answer.
And I think the words that we're using now, at least professionally, we're moving to resist and refuse dynamics, which I think captures the complication a little better because the resist and refuse can be focused on the child. It's not about the parent's behavior. It's about the child resisting and refusing. So let's look there first. Then we've got one parent resisting and refusing sending. So it creates the grayscales already in the words. Yep.
And let me just say, she mentions her two older children. Sounds like they're refusing to stay with him. I don't know what that means. Are they refusing to go completely? Or they're going and staying somewhere else? I'm not real sure. So that's another piece of information that leads into her idea that this is not good because I already have two children who are saying, I'm not going back there. It's too
right.
scary.
Right.
Hey, listeners, you've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. And the same can be said about co-parenting. If navigating the beginning of the year has been difficult due to a co-parent's alcohol abuse, I have the perfect solution. It's called SoberLink. SoberLink is more than a portable alcohol monitoring tool. It's a pathway to new beginnings and stronger, healthier family dynamics. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition confirms their identity. Tamper sensors flag any attempts to cheat. And results get sent instantly to your phone, giving you peace of mind that your kids are with a sober parent. So lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit www.soberlink.com/dilemmas to learn more and get $50 off of your device. So let's tell Kimberly what some of the steps might be to work through this problem. First of all, what does your parenting plan say?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when you made this parenting plan. I don't know when you were last in court. I don't know if you ever went to court. Maybe they mediated this. Maybe a judge has never heard this history. I don't know. But your current parenting plan is what the court says you must do. And if the parenting plan says dad gets 4 weeks in the summer or whatever, and that's what you must do, you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
You have to send them. The only caveat with that would be to visit an attorney,
mm-hmm.
present your entire case to the attorney, and then the attorney can advise you whether or not it's a good idea for you to withhold the kids from dad.
Yeah.
Based on what he or she learns. So we can't tell you that because we're not getting your whole case and we're not attorneys. If you do it on your own without consulting an attorney, without any good legal representation, you can almost guarantee you're going to be called a parental alienator.
Right. At least they could file a temporary if they really thought.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So we want the kids to be able to endure their time with dad, especially these two younger ones who don't have a choice. They're not as old as the older ones. We don't know how the younger ones feel. She didn't really say, she did say he does occasionally communicate with them, but he's pretty absent. I guess that means they don't talk to him a lot, but it's 6 and 8. They want another dad.
Yeah.
Warts and all. You just do. Even the 13 and 16 year old do, but they're busy. They don't want to know either one of their parents at this point.
No.
I'm done with you. I know more than you. I'm off to my own life. 6 and 8 year old, they want to know their dad. When you withhold them because you think that dad is toxic, I don't know what the flip side of that would be for them. Is it that toxic that they need to be told you're not going to see your dad because it's too toxic there? And would that alone be abusive?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you send them, then how are you going to help your kids go and be able to still feel safe while there?
Yeah. Yeah. Some kind of coping, some kind of safety protocol, mm-hmm. some kind of relying on each other. And at 6 and 8, that's hard enough in and of itself.
Yeah, if they were older, you could say, run to grandma's, wherever grandma lives.
Right.
Pick up the phone and call grandma. That's really hard for a 6 and 8 year old.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know I don't care how close you used to be to his family.
Mm.
Blood is always thicker than water. So you know, I wouldn't try to employ them in any way to help mm-mm. with this. So it really is up to the 6 and 8 year old to figure out what do I wow. do?
Yes.
You know, and I remember growing up and my dad could have a hot temper. And when he would go off, I remember just going outside to ride my bike
mm-hmm.
till he cooled down. You know, I think kids learn those coping skills because that's what you have to do.
Right.
That's what you want to do in adulthood. If
yes.
something seems toxic, I'm going to separate myself from this toxic environment or event. So we want kids to know how to do that. So I would suggest to Kimberly that she sits down with her kids and just says, okay, when you go to dad's, I know in the past there's been some fighting and stuff there, but you know, people fight. It starts to feel a little bit scary. Find a place that you can go. Go to your room. Put on your headphones, listen to loud music, do something, especially when she says they're fighting about the kids, which tells me that her 13 and 16 year old have probably come back and reported a lot of things about stepmom and
right.
their fights and what their fights are about and all of that stuff, which just makes her skin crawl that my 6 and 8 year old are going to have to listen to her, maybe the stepmom complaining that the kids have to be here for the summer.
Right. Know. Right.
No kid wants to hear that. So encourage the child as soon as your senses, your internal gut says, this probably isn't something I want to hear. Isolate yourself. Go outside if it's daytime and safe to play outside. You know, go ride your bike. Go do something that you so that you don't have to witness or hear it.
So let me take this in a little bit different direction. Because what would you say to Kimberly if her 6 and 8 year old are being told that stepmom doesn't love them, or whether point blank saying, mm-hmm. I don't want you here. You don't mm-hmm. belong here. I'm, you know, sorry you were ever born. This mm-hmm. kind of thing. Or, yeah. and I can see dad and stepmom arguing because stepmom's favoring her kids and treating his kids differently. What advice would your advice be different to Kimberly?
Well, this is a matter of perception. Those are all possibilities, Rick. Yes, those are all possible. Are they probable? We don't know.
Right.
So when it's possible, our irrational thoughts can get the best of us. She's been through this marriage with this man and it was toxic. And that's at the top of her thinking sure. pattern, right? That mm-hmm. I know how it was and I know how I felt and I don't want my kids to feel that way. And oh my gosh, I have to do something, you know, and then you want to be reactive, but you can't really react to this. Maybe the way your thoughts and feelings are telling you to.
Sure.
Because it could get you in other kinds of trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to say, how do I need to change my perception? And the perception change here for me is to let your kids know that's unfortunate. I'm sorry. But the good news is, you have two parents who love you mm-hmm. unconditionally. I'm mm-hmm. one of them and your dad is the other. And parents show unconditional love in different ways. And I'm sorry that she can't.
Right.
But you're blessed. You have me and I unconditionally love you. And I absolutely know you're lovable. It's the only thing you can say to a child when they feel abandoned by a parent, or they feel
or an adult.
Misunderstood by a parent, or yeah, any adult, is to say, well, the evidence tells me, because I live with you and I know you,
yeah.
that you are a lovable child. So I don't have any evidence that you're not. And even if you were hard to love, I would still love you because you're my child.
Yeah.
That's the way parental love works, at least on my end. Don't try to speak for the other parent necessarily. Well, I know your dad loves you. He's just a hard person. You don't know.
No.
So you just say, you're blessed because I have unconditional love for you. And you just show that more than say it. You show that to them. I think Kimberly could benefit from some individual therapy.
Okay.
To process her own experience with this person. Maybe she already has, but sometimes in our own trauma, we can sort of see everything in the world through that lens. And part of trauma therapy is helping us to see the world separate and apart from our own trauma. Not everybody is untrustworthy. Not everybody is going to hurt me. Not everybody is scary, you know? And so this is a little bit different for her because this is the same person who she feels abused her.
And it's her kids, right?
But when I read the line, his new wife is jealous of our kids and she forbids him to communicate with me, even if it's about our children, that doesn't sound like an abused wife.
Okay.
Sounds like they might both be a little toxic and they're abusing one another.
Yeah.
Does he sound like the kind of guy who really would bow down to someone and refuse you to talk to your co-parent? So I have a lot of questions about whether or not Kimberly's assessment of this co-parent is on point or whether she's seeing him through her own past lens.
Or she's getting accurate information, right?
Right. I don't know. We don't know. I'm not questioning the validity of what she wrote. I'm just throwing out possibilities.
Right.
That allow us for a change of perception. Another thing I think I want Kimberly to do, and all parents who suspect any kind of abuse, is, you know, the authorities probably aren't going to react to a one-off. Mm-mm. Because they give people a lot of grace. Okay. Some people get drunk and do the wrong thing. Some people get angry and they do the wrong thing. So we're really looking for a pattern. So keep a journal. When the kids say, hey, you know, daddy threw a coffee cup at stepmom. That doesn't sound right, but write it down. When, who told you, when, what happened? And, you know, a month later, you get another snippet of information that there was a huge fight and somebody got pushed. There's number two. And maybe by the third one, it sounds like it's escalating. And then maybe you do call the authorities. So keep a journal so that you aren't reacting to everything you hear, but you are recognizing a pattern of number one, frequency, intensity, and duration. My dad and stepmom fought for 3 solid hours. That's pretty long.
Yeah.
That's different than a 3-minute fight. What's the frequency? How often does this happen? What happened once the entire summer? Okay. It happened every other day.
Yeah.
And what is the intensity? How intense does it get? What are the actual things happening? Well, they yell at each other a lot. Well, a lot of people yell. But now they're throwing things. They're punching holes in the wall. Somebody's getting dragged around by the hair. Okay. Getting more intense now, you know.
Right.
So keep in mind those three things, frequency, duration, and intensity, as a way to help wrap your head around what's going on there. And honestly, having that kind of journal is going to be important in a court case at some point, instead of you going by your memory.
Yeah. Don't write the journal in order to confront the other parent.
No.
And also, how do you do that with a 6 and 8 year old without interrogating them? Let's say I want to get all 3 categories down. I would be tempted to interrogate my 6. And
obviously, yeah, you don't want to do an interrogation.
No.
6 and 8 year old will tell you more than you want to know.
Okay. Usually, that's
unless true. They've been point blank told by the other parent, do not tell your mom anything that happens in this house, which happens. And kids, if you ask them, will get real nervous because they're trying to figure out, oh, what am I allowed to tell? What am I not allowed to tell? Which is the reason why you don't tell your kids to keep a secret. Because they just feel like I can't talk about my life at all because it's too scary to try to figure out what's, you know, acceptable and unacceptable to talk about. But you know, mom can hear something maybe and just start asking, oh, that's interesting. So, you know, does that happen a lot?
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of does. Happens once a week. Okay. Were you scared? No, I was fine. Okay. You know, you ask calm, unassuming questions and see how much they're willing to tell you. And you just document. If you get to an interrogative, they will shut down.
Right.
They're going to start to go, oops, wait a minute. Maybe this is off limits. Yeah. Maybe this will get dad in trouble. Maybe I don't want to get dad in trouble because then he's going to hurt me more. Or he's going to yell at me more for telling mom thing. You know, they're smart. They get the lay of the land pretty quickly.
Yeah. Right. And so they come back from the summer and make some comment about, boy, they had another fight. don't say, oh, wait, let me get my pen and paper.
No. It's a skill, Rick.
And don't record. Don't record.
And it requires some finesse.
Okay.
But that's the best you can do, you know. So to recap, Kimberly, go see an attorney about this first and foremost to see if it's something you should react to, or at least get some advice, and then do some of the things we talk about with regard to writing in a journal, telling your kids to isolate themselves if they ever feel a little bit afraid. Because if it's happening once a month and it's concerning and even a little scary, but the rest of the time for 2 months, it's good with dad, you don't want to take them out of dad's life.
Right.
Because of one toxic incident, because they still need that time with their dad.
Yeah. So it sounds like with the temptation of protecting our children is often let's remove them. And rather than take a kind of helicopter approach to parenting, those are opportunities to equip them or instill them with skills, give them the ability to start to have voice and start boundary management for themselves, what they can do, rather than just protect them.
And I would also talk to the older kids. It's possible that they have had a completely different experience than the 6 and 8 year old are having now. Mm-hmm. You know, things must have been really bad 2 years ago when there was domestic violence in the house and somebody was getting arrested. And so I'm assuming the 13 and 16 year old really have some traumatic experiences. So we want to validate their experience. We want mom to say, I get it. I understand. But I'm hoping that your dad learned something and now they're back together and maybe that's a good thing. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for your younger siblings. So I would encourage the older ones to not try to taint the younger ones.
Right. That's good.
Could be a different experience. Makes sense why the older ones maybe don't want to try again, because I'm not going back there. But even the younger ones need to see their dad in a better place.
True.
If he does, in fact, get into a better place. So I would talk to them about that. You know, it's hard to forgive people. It's hard to have grace for people that are supposed to love you and then expose you to things that aren't very loving. And that's really hard. But at the same time, we want to teach our kids that people can do better. They can try and get better. And we don't want to, a past incident necessarily to dictate the future relationship, especially with a primary relationship like parent-child.
Yeah.
Again, if this was Uncle Joe, we'd be like, we don't need to see Uncle Joe anymore.
Right.
But this is your dad. This is your mom. We consider those in the mental health field primary acute relationships. Acute meaning that they have a lot of sway in your adult life.
Yeah.
So we don't want to just say, they don't matter. Now, obviously, if it's abusive and harmful and all of that stuff, then you weigh on the other side. It's better to not be in a relationship with them and deal with the consequences of not having a parent in your life than be in relationship and risking your life.
Yeah.
And those are hard decisions to make. They really are. Anything else you want to add to that, Rick?
No, I feel sad about it almost feels like it is a stuck situation. I want to protect my kids and the other parents doesn't have the skill. And so I could see feeling helpless. I can empathize with Kimberly, the situation, how difficult it is.
Me too. All right, Kimberly, thank you so much for your email. And please feel free to email us at dilemma@cpdilemmas.com or get on our website at cpdilemmas.com and leave us a voicemail.
Very good.
Talking with you, Rick. We'll see y'all next week.
All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, listeners, we've got some exciting news. Starting March 6th, I'll be hosting Hump Day Help every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time via Zoom. Each Wednesday will be focused on a specific topic. The first Wednesdays of the month will focus on parental alienation. The second Wednesdays will focus on parents dealing with false allegations. The third Wednesdays will be about surviving a narcissistic co-parent. And fourth Wednesdays, confronting post-separation control and abuse. You can come to one or all. The only requirement is that you become a Patreon non-impossible VIP. The cost is only $10 a month, but I guarantee you'll get your money's worth out of these support groups. We'll run them through the end of May, and if attendance is constant, we'll continue through the summer. So get started today with Patreon. The link is in the show notes. The information contained in this podcast is generic. It must not be misconstrued as constituting legal or psychological advice. Decisions relevant to any specific individual, family system, or case require the direct evaluation of skilled, child-centered professionals.